Penguin Random House Audio presents American Rule, How a Nation Conquered the World but Failed Its People by Jared Yates Sexton. Read for you by McLeod Andrews. It is well that we keep in mind the fact that not all of American history is recorded. And in some ways we are fortunate that it isn't. For if it were, we might become so chagrined by the discrepancies which exist between our democratic ideals and our social reality that we'd soon lose heart. Perhaps this is why we possess two basic versions of American history. One which is written and as neatly stylized as ancient myth, and the other unwritten and as chaotic and full of contradictions, changes of pace, and surprises as life itself. Ralph Ellison, Going to the Territory, 1986. Prologue. On the first anniversary of the disastrous election of 2016, I drove a few hours to a discussion about my recent book chronicling the rise of Donald Trump's movement, The People Are Going to Rise Like the Waters Upon Your Shore, A Story of American Rage. It was a cold and rainy night, and the audience came dressed for warmth and armed with questions about the sorry state of political affairs. Like most Americans, they were starving for hope. Already they were dismayed by Trump's cruel presidency and questioning whether the America they had known and loved would ever return. I did my best to give cogent, interesting answers, grabbed a coffee for the road, and braved the drizzle to find my car. As I was about to step into the shimmering street, a hand landed on my shoulder. I jumped. I'd been getting death threats for months. People had shown up at my house in the middle of the night, and hardly a day passed where I didn't receive an odd fascist message detailing murderous fantasies. When I spun around, I half expected to find a jackbooted neo-Nazi thug looking to make good on those threats. Instead, it was a kind-faced, middle-aged woman I recognized from the crowd. "I'm sorry to bother you," she said, "but I had a question, something I didn't want to ask in front of anyone else." "Sure," I said, gripping my to-go coffee for the heat. "I have to ask, is this the end of America?" Since lighting off on the campaign trail in 2015 and watching Trump form a movement girded by white identity politics and despotic rhetoric, a movement unburdened by shame or the onus of truth, I'd been wondering the same thing. It was an anxiety I never wanted to give voice to, lest I gift it weight. A man like Donald Trump winning the presidency meant that something was very, very wrong with the United States of America. Before I could answer, the woman asked another question. How did we get here? This one I had covered. I'd been answering it at every book tour stop and in every interview. I rattled off something about the radicalization of the Republican Party, the effects of polarization, the media's insatiable desire to turn politics into entertainment, the corrosive influence of new technologies, and the betrayal of the American people by a government bought and sold. It all came out in a practiced stream that sounded rehearsed and performed. The stranger winced. "Yeah," she reluctantly agreed. "That makes sense. But how did all that happen? How did we get here?" I wrestled with that on my long drive home. For the most part, I could trace the explanation through Richard Nixon, the civil rights movement and social revolutions of the 1960s and 1970s, and the struggle of the Cold War. But as I continued to think about it, that story devolved into simplistic parody. Over the course of those hours on the road, I realized that while I had a working understanding of American history that I'd gleaned through the years, I lacked a deeper grasp. The history I understood was the history featured in television shows, popular movies, textbooks that meant to guide students with as few bumps along the way as possible. The past year had proven that this history didn't work anymore. When Trump's victory was added at the end as yet another twist, the narrative I'd subscribed to lost all sense and meaning. The arc of time that I'd heard spoken about so eloquently fractured under the weight. I could explain Trump's victory politically, demographically, and socially, but historically, I was at a loss. By the time I pulled into my driveway in Georgia the next day, I had resolved to overcome my ignorance and relearn history from the very beginning. I had learned dates and surface-level details about the most important events, amassed an extensive repertoire of facts about wars and leading figures, but was lacking in a coherent and comprehensive understanding. What I knew was a privileged version of history that had been crafted to showcase America as the moral protagonist of a larger narrative. And now that narrative had all but collapsed. I knew American history, but needed to learn the history of America. I grew up in a rural Indiana community in a poor family of factory workers and laborers. Coming of age in the 1980s, I was surrounded by all the pageantry of idyllic America. Every 4th of July, a giant parade flowed through the center of my sleepy town. My neighbors waved bright American flags as bands played The Stars and Stripes Forever and God Bless America. In school, I was taught that an exceptional country founded by revolutionary fathers conquered a continent, overcame its vices in a terrible civil war, and then healed to spread its message of freedom and liberty to every corner of the globe. My family was impoverished, dysfunctional, abusive, but at least I'd been lucky enough to be born in the United States of America, a divine blessing repeated by my elders and teachers and stressed by my preacher every Sunday morning as he pounded his pulpit. Reality is an odd thing. We see the world through the prism imposed upon us. When I talk about my childhood, both in the church and in abusive households, people often react in horror. They can't believe I didn't suspect something was wrong, that I didn't intuitively understand reality was different from the world I languished in. But without the necessary context and without needed exposure to the outside world, I was trapped. I didn't know there was a way out because I didn't know there was somewhere to escape to. Despite our indoctrination, my family still understood that not everything was perfect. Our financial and personal struggles nodded towards some underlying problem. The way the world worked around us didn't make sense. If America was a faultless country operating based on God's will, then how were we, His chosen people, still suffering? Why were our jobs disappearing? Why was our town deteriorating? To my family, the answer was a conspiracy theory that appeared across the country, a supernatural narrative that cemented America as God's chosen nation and pitted it against an evil other responsible for our ills. The story was both organic and manufactured by political messaging, popular culture, and rhetorical appeals by evangelical leaders. It was the kind of myth that races through populations like a runaway virus. In our evangelical church, sermons painted America as beset on all sides by sinister forces. In my church, Satan wasn't merely a metaphor, but a literal evil being who could appear at any moment and was actively gathering an army of the wicked to wage an unholy war. That army was nebulous and constantly changing. Our preacher referred to an ill-defined they we were warned to avoid. In hushed, closed-door conversations, however, the people around me were more specific. Satan's army was everyone outside of our church, outside of our sleepy town, outside of the United States of America, and even some within who had fallen under the spell of the devilish trickster. They were people who didn't look like us, who didn't think like us. People we needed to be ready to fight and kill when the second coming arrived and the battle for the end of the world commenced. A firm believer in this myth, my grandmother bought cabinets full of books dedicated to understanding the evil conspiracy, a plot by an international cabal obsessed with destroying America and its Christians, a plot that mirrored the Book of Revelation, which our preachers turned to more than any other volume in the Bible. In these worn and well-parsed paperbacks, ordered from catalogs and picked up secondhand at yard sales, our evangelical faith merged with the occult and American history, creating a mystical reality where spiritual and civic warfare raged every single day. I had no way of knowing I was a member of a cult. As in other cults, our leaders demanded we ignore dissenting voices and alternate sources of information. We were told to scorn culture and remain ideologically pure. We were under attack, after all, and even listening.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?